Welcome back, Inebriates. This is Andy, the Inebriate Podcast, and I am once again... please excuse the phone. That doesn't normally happen, because normally I'm not recording from home. And normally I'm...
Oh, good.
And...
That's awesome. I haven't heard a home phone in a long time.
Yeah.
Yeah, me too. That just brought a smile to my face.
It's kind of like
old school.
You know, endangered species nowadays. But... sorry, hang on one second.
Yeah.
I'm really sorry about that.
No, it's all good.
All right, sorry. Unexpected. All right, so I am in my living room, and I am joined today by Kevin and Cody of Crown Lands. Welcome to the show, guys.
Hey, thanks for having us.
Generally the start off question I've been asking everyone lately is like, how are you guys faring? Are you guys locked, you know, sheltering in place? Are you able to kind of move around? You guys are up in Canada, so I don't know how much it's different.
It's pretty wild. Everything's kind of shut down. Other than the essential services, I've got a cat on my lap right now. My cat is not shut down. He's enjoying having me home. I don't think he wants to be a part of it.
I'm surprised mine hasn't.
It's the best, huh?
Yeah. So,
It's been wild. I mean, like, our rehearsal studio is in, like, a shared communal space. And so, unfortunately... like, we can't go there, so we've been holding up in our, like, respective home studios and whatnot.
And it's pretty brutal, honestly, not gonna lie. Like, it sucks. We just want to make noise, and you can't, and we're just trying to hang in there.
Yeah, you know, it's like we're doing the, we're trying to write out ideas and send them to each other on voice memos and whatnot, and, stay productive. We had like a huge year planned ahead for us. It was supposed to be like our breakout year, so to speak. Yeah. And obviously it's become just another hibernation year, which is a bummer, but it's kind of like a collective shared trauma that everyone in our industry feels.
Yeah. So
it's, yeah. You know, like the silver lining is I think we're all in this together and, we're trying to take it day by day and stay positive, which, you know, when I've got little Mo here, you know, it's,
little. Just,
Yeah, that's not a very little cat.
You guys see that Tiger King show yet?
Oh, yeah, actually. They actually just put up a new episode, and they kind of, like, recap with a bunch of people who were on
what?
It.
What?
Yeah.
I got to check that out.
Yeah, I feel like they must have had enough footage for, like, seasons.
Oh, my God.
That's absolutely nuts.
Yeah, and it's one of those, like, I don't know if it's that good of a show or if everyone just happened to be stuck inside at the exact time that it dropped, so we all watched it together, you know?
Yeah, well, it's kind of like a train wreck, right? Like, you can't look away. Like,
yeah, it's
just that's just how it is.
I think that is perfect timing, though. It's like that... the idea that everyone's kind of consuming the same sort of media right now, and that being the fact that, like, you know, Netflix is kind of dominating that, and then Disney Plus isn't making any original content for, like, this period, and then, but the fact it's like, mm-hmm. music streaming is kind of at an all-time low, because everyone consumes music when they're driving, or when they're at work, or when they're at a bar, and so, you know, you'd think that, you know, people would be listening to more music. I mean, I'm sure Cody and myself are listening to more because we're total fucking music nerds. And we spend, like, every waking moment, like, obsessed on that. But I think for the majority of people, not many people are listening to as much music as they were before, like, the world ended.
Yeah, I actually was interviewing someone yesterday, and he's doing something really interesting. His name is Kyle Hurley, and he's in London. He is... picking bands and listening to their complete discography of albums from first all the way through. And he's like, oh, I just finished Led Zeppelin and I'm in the middle of Van Morrison right now.
That's
a really interesting kind of way to spend your coin. Have you guys found any?
Yeah, that's a really cool way.
Yeah, have you guys?
Yeah, like, yeah, now's the time to, like, deep dive.
Yeah.
Pardon?
Have you guys found any other quarantine hacks, I guess, to pass the time other than Tiger King?
I'm making a lot of coffee these days. I've always been like a big coffee nerd, so I've ordered a few pounds of like my local roastery, and just been experimenting with my brewing time, because you know you can get like super nerdy on like your grind size, your total extraction time, your brew temperature, you know, all that stuff, you know, like blooming your coffee for 30 seconds versus 35 seconds before you brew it. You know, it's like, you know, so now I've got all the time to really get on like the nitty gritty. It's like, you know, like, you know, a Nicaragua coffee versus an Ethiopia coffee, you know, like what are the intricacies of that? And I've got these flavor, it's like wine tasting, you know, I've got these tasting cards and like a little journal I can keep with like tasting notes for specific cups, and you know,
so, kind of fun. So you're saying you've become a coffee alchemist. You're brewing up the perfect cup.
Ooh. I was just going to say fucking snob, but I like alchemist. I'll take that. You're too kind.
I've been like teaching myself guitar. I mean, Kevin's been giving me some sick ass lessons too, to be honest. But it's been pretty cool to kind of jump into that world. And other than that, I've been playing a lot of Super Smash Bros. That's a fun way to pass the time.
Yeah. throw your Switch handle on there.
Yo. The weird thing about Nintendo is you have to add each other. So it's like, it's not as cool. In order for you to add someone, you need to add them on both ends.
I see. So were you guys touring or recording, or like what were you doing when all, you know, kind of hell broke loose?
Well, we were planning for the release of our first record and a big tour that was coinciding
with that. Pretty big tour.
We had like 30 dates overseas, and then we had like a few festivals domestically and in the UK. It was supposed to be like a really exciting time, you know. It's exciting for very different reasons now. So that's a huge bummer. Yeah, and like at the same time, we've also been writing like our second and a little bit of maybe even our third record at this point. You know, so right now we're still kind of in the middle of trying to write that. Obviously, things have slowed down. You know, we were just about to start picking up steam for writing this next record, and you know.
Yeah.
Now it's
all completely different crashing down.
I think everybody's in the same boat, you know. So normally I ask, you know, musicians kind of like to compare themselves to someone, or you know, because I hate asking like what style of music do you play, because I feel like that can be so difficult to answer, especially nowadays. But you guys went on tour with Jack White, right?
We did.
Who I'm a huge fan of, and then so I'm like, oh, I gotta check this guy out on YouTube, and you guys are definitely kind of my jam. Like, I really because I'm a big Jack White fan. I love the Black Keys, and I feel like you guys fit like right in that kind of rock, almost like if you drove by your neighbor's house and that sound was coming out of the garage, you wouldn't be that surprised. Like, it's kind of stripped down, and I really dug
that's it. Sick.
So how did the whole touring for Jack White then come about?
We just got asked like kind of out of the blue. We share an agent with Jack. So like we were just kind of, just got off our tour with Primus, and, then we just got the call, and they're like, okay, so could you be in Edmonton in 48 hours? And we're like, oh shit. So we got the whole crew together. We drove right out. Packed all our stuff, drove right out, and made it to the show. It was pretty awesome, spontaneous. And
yeah, great. We were supposed to do like a Western tour with another artist, and then we got pulled off that. And we got the phone call. I think we got called on like Monday night, and we had to be on the road Tuesday morning to play our show on Thursday. And like it was across the country, you know, and Canada's a very big country. Yeah. So it was basically like the state's equivalent. I guess it would be like driving from Detroit to Montana in like a couple days. I want to say like that's kind of like, you know, Yeah. And it was in the winter. And so like it was crazy. So we had to like, you know, we call up our front of house guy, Justin. He's like, man, I can't go. I didn't get my special tour shampoo. Like straight up. That was
yeah.
Yeah. And he's like, I don't know, man. Like I need to go grocery shopping. Like you guys drive out there, I'll fly out and meet you. And I'm like, really? Get in the
wait, you're gonna
band, dude. Like, what the hell?
What the hell is tour shampoo?
It was like, I have no idea.
We still don't know.
But it was a straight up, it was a real conversation we had. Cody's always prepared with the primo shit, yes. Though. So we were good.
Bottles of conditioner.
See, that's why you always get to be prepared, man. You don't know when the apocalypse tour is going to break out.
It's true. Like I think that's the life of being like a really small band with a really good team is that our team is like kind of ahead of where we are in terms of our career. So because of that, the opportunities that we get are usually fairly last minute because it's like a bigger established artist like Jack White doesn't have to decide who's opening up for him until like, you know, the day before he goes on his tour. And so, you know, it's like when you get asked to jump, you just say how high. You don't try and figure out the logistics. You just kind of go. And that was our first time playing stadiums. And so we had to actually rent a bunch of equipment in Alberta. And so, you know, we weren't even allowed to announce that we were touring with Jack at that point. So we're calling up these production companies asking for this equipment to be delivered like here and there. And they're like, oh, so who are you touring with? They're like, we can't say. And they're like, it's the Jack White tour, isn't it? Like, yeah, it is.
Yeah. Not saying yes. I'm definitely not saying no. So this was the first time you played stadiums. Like, what, like, how is that? Because you guys are relatively a very small band. You're two guys. Is that like a huge, are the musicians with you? Or like, what is the change from playing that?
No, we run it like Lean and Mean. Yeah.
Our mantra is no backing tracks, no click tracks. So it's just us two up there making all the noise. Yeah. Exactly.
So we try to be honest. We always say like, I'm sorry, Cody, you go.
That's all good. Yeah. I was just going to say, like it was a surreal experience playing stadiums. It was huge. But like you wouldn't really see it because the lights kind of blind you, but you hear it more than anything. And that's pretty wild.
Yeah, it's pretty wild. I think it was our first time really experiencing crowds singing back to us. You know, if we did like call and response parts in our bridges or something, and that's like a really cool moment when there's like 10,000 people like vibing on your shit. Because being an opening band for a guy like Jack White, you know, people aren't there for the opening band; they're there for, you know, Jack White. And the fact that he was pretty anal about like no cell phone rule. Everyone has, you know, their phone locked up in a bag. for the whole set. And so no one is distracted on Instagram while you're playing your set. So everyone's a lot more
engaged.
Actually
listening.
But then the problem with that is it's like, you know, sometimes it's important to like look like you're successful, just as important as it is to be successful. And so we got off that tour and it may have been like almost like it never happened because there was no viral trending Crownlands happen, you know, and it's like, you know, it's weird because like that matters a lot these days. But I'm super glad that the phones were banned because we got to have a bit more of a connected experience.
It was sick,
I've never been to one where they lock up the phones, but it just baffles me to see people like hold up their phone and like staring at the screen. I'm like, look at the guy on the stage, you know? He's like, but you know, sign of the times, I guess.
Yeah, like they're just like holding their phone up the whole time to watch it later, and it's all like distorted and shitty.
I think like the first concert I ever went to, was before cell phones existed. And so like I borrowed my sister's like camcorder, like full-on thing, and I'm standing there like I'm like 13 years old filming this show, and I'm like, you know, I think like halfway through luckily the battery died, and so then I was forced to live in the moment. But you know, it's like even back then, right, you know, like the classic thing, like, you know, go to Disneyland and like there's the dad there like holding the whole fucking rig back in the day, you know?
Yep.
You had to record on a VHS cassette, you know. So it's like it doesn't matter. It's been, you know, everyone's been doing it since you know,
So I'm curious,
what's become easier to do that?
What was the first concert you went to see? Is it embarrassing or was it good?
It was the Smashing Pumpkins.
Oh,
yeah,
sick.
So it was pretty sick. Yeah. And then like, what was your first concert, Code?
Neil Young. That was a great one.
That's pretty good. That's pretty good.
Yeah.
Andy, what was your first concert?
I'm way older than you guys. I went and saw Whitesnake.
Whoa, sick.
Yeah.
And, I remember my dad telling me when he went to see Whitesnake.
Yeah.
That's fucking amazing.
Steve Vai was touring with them. So.
Oh, wow. Nice.
Yeah. It was a good show.
That's so sick. Yeah. Right on.
Steve Vai, man. That's sick. I love Steve Vai. Not necessarily for his playing, but more just for like how serious he takes the music. You know, I love how he got his start with Frank Zappa. Like all my favorite guitar players got to start with Zappa, man. I think
Zappa's amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's always one of my favorite bar games to play. Like, what is the one concert that you went to that you're embarrassed to say you've ever been to?
Yeah, I love that. And, all right.
So mine, I went and saw Yanni.
Nice.
So
it's awesome.
What about you guys? Is there like one show that you just don't want to admit that you've been to?
Well, it's kind of like an obscure. Okay.
I went to see. I went to this with my mom. I went to see like a river dancing show at like our local stadium years ago, and it was actually fucking sick. You know, like,
really?
You never think like you know, as you know, aspiring like rock musician, like I'm gonna go see this river dancing concert, but it was dope. You know, lots of sick like Celtic instrumentation. How about you, Code?
There's like this band that I wasn't like a big fan of, but I went anyway. And it was they're called the Gaslight Anthem, and I was like, it's pretty cool, but like, and then I like listened to their music, and I was like, oh no, I don't like this at all. And so I already bought the ticket, so I had to stay. And yeah, that's mine.
So how did you guys, I mean, I'm assuming you've been in other bands, like how did you like form this duo and like what was, did you kind of jump in right away to larger venues or did you kind of start off in smaller clubs?
We started out playing
tiny clubs.
You know, like it was
like the three people and like in a 30 cap room.
Yeah. I mean, like our first tour out east, like I think we started the tour in Halifax, Nova Scotia. We played in front of like three people. And then by the time we finished that tour was when we were touring with Jack and we came back to the same town. And like, I think the same three people that were at that show came to our show, which was sick. And then it was, you know,
it was great.
It was like 5,000 people. So that was great. That was a primo moment.
Yeah, that was amazing. Yeah, but we slugged it out for years playing
everywhere that we could, you know.
Yeah,
loading our gear in the worst venues in the world and playing for some amazing people that we're still friends with today.
Three flights of stairs and everything. So many stairs.
I remember that. Yeah, we played this one venue in
Montreal.
Yeah, and it was literally three fucking flights of stairs. And
they were spiral stairs too. Like the shitty ones. Like really tiny. Like gear should not travel up those kinds of stairs. But we did
it. That was a nightmare. That was the worst. Yeah. And again, like, yeah, we pack up and we were like opening for this really sick signed progressive metal band.
Oh, yeah.
And there was no one there. We played for like one of our friends and the fucking sound guy. And like the load in and the load out was the worst thing ever.
It was so shit. I remember being we can't do this three flights of stairs in like this. Like if there's spiral staircases, we need to find out before we come there.
Yeah, and it was like a 6-hour drive from our house, and it wasn't even on tour. I think it was a one-off show, and we played it because we knew that this band was, you know, it was signed band. This would be a great opportunity. It's like no one was there. It was great.
And didn't we drive home that night too? We did that a lot in the early days. We would just like do one-offs like way far from our house and just bolt it home in one go. Get home at like 8 in the morning.
Like, that's what you do.
Good times. Yeah, we slugged it out. And we formed a band. I was in another band. And then Kev just came back from hitchhiking across Canada to LA. He lived there for a bit. Came back. We met. He joined this band for about 6 months. And then he went on tour with another band. And then when he came back from that, he hit me up. He was like, "Hey, you want to jam?" And I was like, "Hell yeah, sure. This would be great." And then we holed up in a barn, and it was just Kevin on guitar and bass drum, and I was just singing, and I never sang really before. And we were just like, let's try something different. And we formed Crownlands from that. It was awesome.
Yeah, I was actually going through my old I used like a standalone like SD card cassette recorder. And I found those jams the other day, like the first time we ever played together. And it's just crazy how quickly everything had come together. You know, because Cody and I had already known each other for about a year. And it's funny because, you know, when you know somebody for a year, you think like you know them. And now, you know, Cody and I have known each other for like 5 or 6 years. So it's, you know, like now it's like our entire adult lives, basically. We've been in this band. Kind of like we were talking about it the other day. Like we've like you know we've grown up in this project and actualized ourselves through the medium of Crownlands, and that's kind of cool. And I feel you know, I'm still figuring out like who we are and like what we are as artists. And I think like we kind of had a joke like the first day we played together. We made a joke. It's like, what if the White Stripes covered Rush? And like we've kind of like stayed true to that, which is nice. Not to say that we've stagnated, but I feel like our hearts and our souls, in terms of like what we you know want to be as musicians, like is able to be flexed in this band, and that's kind of nice. Yeah. It doesn't feel like either of us is being like smothered or something. Where you got like the one, you know, there's always in one band, there's like the quiet guy who has to like do stuff he doesn't want to do, like John Paul Jones and Led Zeppelin, right?
Yeah.
So we don't have that, which is great. That's why it's good being a duo. Is you don't have the one guy who's like, you know, like screw you guys, I'm out. Like I gotta do my own thing, you know. So it's,
yeah, my girlfriend doesn't want me to go.
Yeah. So like, you know, being a duo, like you know, it's we disagree on the little things, but we agree on the big things, and that's like you know.
Yeah. And it's funny shit. Sometimes we think we're disagreeing with each other, and then we talk, and we're like, wait, we're on the same page here. What's going on?
Yeah, you argue for 10 minutes on the same side. You're like, what do you mean?
And then you're like, oh, wait, yeah, right. We're on the same side. We're good.
Yeah. I want to make good music. I don't know. I want to make bad music.
Yeah, I don't know about you, man.
Now, is it harder to write music for a duo and have that same kind of full band sound, or is it easier?
Yeah, definitely. It's a totally different kind of challenge. You have to arrange your music differently. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's more so on Kevin's part than me. I just got a wail.
Again, if we were in another universe, Cody would probably be just a drummer and I'd be just a bass player, because like we started out as like the rhythm section of the band, right? And I think that's why we've gotten along well. Like I feel like all of like
I never wanted to sing my whole life.
Yeah, I never wanted to play guitar. just wanted to play bass. Yeah, you know, so it's like, so I think like neither of us are really in like spotlight stealing roles as musicians as we cut our teeth and like grew up as artists. And so to kind of come into our own as lead, you know, instrumentalist in a band is kind of interesting. And I think we bring a lot of that to our respective roles, you know, Cody being more of like a vocalist and, you know, myself being known as more of a guitarist. And I think that's like a fun little dynamic because, you know, you think about it, really, it informs the way you write your music. Makes it a little different.
Oh, sorry, go ahead.
Oh, yeah, no, you go. You go, Andy.
Do you think it kind of, you know, when you're a larger band and you know, you kind of have that lead persona, a lot of times they can be kind of demanding or diva. Do you think because you got started in the rhythm section?
Oh, don't get me wrong. We're very demanding diva personalities. 100%.
I didn't mean
Very difficult. Oh, yeah.
Okay.
But yeah.
So what did you mean exactly?
So, generally when you have a, you know, the quote unquote front man, maybe it's a stereotype where like, he's kind of the one who kind of feels he needs to be in front, and where you guys were used to kind of being in the rhythm section and kind of hidden behind a drum kit or whatever. Do you think that kind of changed your idea for what your band was going to be? Kind of like,
yeah, I think
cool doesn't like to be seen kind of thing.
Oh
yeah. Well, like the way we kind of set it up is Cody's always like front stage left and I'm front stage right. And it's makes it kind of more.
So we're like right there. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. We're like looking sideways to each other, or like I'm kind of on an angle so that we're always like looking at each other.
Oh, okay.
So it's like a clear sight line and we're both like there.
Yeah, I personally can't stand bands with front men. I think it's embarrassing because it's like you have like one wanker that hangs out with a bunch of musicians and like thinks that like they're the show. Like that's why like I don't dig Guns N' Roses or Aerosmith or like, you know, I even have my problems with Zeppelin for that reason. It's like, I don't know. I think like, you know, if you're gonna like, I don't know, if you're gonna be in a band, like play a fucking instrument, you know?
Yeah,
like that's the whole point. Wow.
Shots fired. I don't see the only time I see a real issue is when it becomes like that's what the band is about, is that front persona. Like, you know, if they're just
Exactly. Like I hate that because there's so many other people in the band that add to it, and it's like it's about the collaboration. It's about the conglomerate, collective of like artists, not about one person. And so when people make it about one person, it's really frustrating because there's so many other awesome
individuals. Unless it's like a solo project, right? Like no one was going.
Yeah,
well,
yeah, no shit.
You know, it's like think of it this way, you know. But like, you know, when people go and see Prince, it would be pretty disappointing if he just, you know, if he was just standing there.
Here's his instrumentalist. Well, yeah, but that's a different kind of dynamic.
Right.
We're talking more so about like any band in general that's not like a person's name.
Yeah, but again, that's what I mean, like, right? Like Prince was a musical genius, you know, and even though he was the front man, he was like, nah, I'm still gonna fucking shred.
Yeah. He had that diva persona, but he could back it up 100%.
Oh yeah, I fucking love
yeah, definitely.
One of my all-time favorite Prince moments, like, I'm not even sure what it was for, but he was playing on stage with Lenny Kravitz, and you can find it on like YouTube and whatnot. But it's like
sick.
Lenny and Prince, it's just ridiculous.
That's awesome. Yeah, I'm going to have to watch that. I haven't seen it.
So, you know, we're in the era of social media and YouTube. Do you guys use that a lot? Because I know it seems like there's two sides where people are like, oh, it's part of the business and I have to do it. And then there's other people who are like, oh, I do it because I have to, and I do it like the bare minimum. Like, where do you guys kind of fall?
True. In terms of YouTube, I don't really use it unless I have to like look up like a vegan recipe for something, and I'm like, oh, how do I do this? Or like, you know, like just like how to's or something.
Yeah.
I don't really like peruse YouTube and check out what's new. But in terms of like social media, I do enjoy it.
But I mean, for like pushing your band.
Oh, okay, yeah.
You know, I know you guys have like a YouTube channel, but do you guys promote it a lot, or is it just kind of?
Yeah, I like it. I enjoy like the whole aspect of involving like social media and doing all that. But yeah, I mean, if I didn't have to do it, I probably wouldn't have one.
Yeah.
Yeah, like the way I see it, it's like if I wasn't in a band, I don't think I would be on social media. But because I'm in a band, I spend like so much of my waking life on social media, and like, you know, and then because of that, I've started to get into like, you know, really big like meme farming and like finding the real dank pages. And I think there's like a really interesting aspect. I think social media is really changing, and like there's a certain kind of like morbid openness that people can express in the meme format these days, especially on like the more edgy side. And I've seen a lot of artists actually grow their social media by making meme pages. And like, who's that guy? Like Lil Nas X, right? He actually made millions of subscribers, right? By making a fan page or a meme page or something.
It was a fan page, not a meme page.
For what?
But yeah, Kevin's confession for memes is real.
Yeah, you know, and so you know, it's that being said, you know, a lot of people have gotten big through social media for the wrong reasons. You know, like was like that chair throwing girl and stuff like that who got featured in Drake's music video and stuff. Like, it's you know, there's like a good side and a bad side. It's like the Schwartz, you know.
Wow, that's a great reference. That oh my fantastic. God, yeah. The Schwartz.
I suppose, and but I mean, there are the good side of it too. There's I wish I knew the guy's name. He's some guy that just recorded a hip hop dance video and ended up in why am I blanking on the guy's name? Hip hop artist. He has a song "Wow," lots of tattoos on his face, white guy, and I can't think of his name now.
Post Malone.
Yeah, thank you, Post Malone. He ended up in Post Malone's video because he was dancing to a Post Malone song, and he looks
no way
60, you know, bald. but he turned out to be much younger, but he looks significantly older. And Post Malone saw it and like ended up on Ellen and stuff like that. Next thing you know, he's in Post Malone.
Oh my god!
Yeah.
Great.
So. Do you guys-
yeah, like the viralness, I think like it's fleeting, right? It's like people can go so much bigger now because social media is so much quicker, but it's like people will forget about it just as quick. And like the kind of music we play is so anachronistic and like not current, not relevant, you know, whatever that is, you know, because we're not whispering into a mic over, you know, a canned beat. And like that's okay because you find your audience grows a lot slower, but because of that, it stays with you longer. And I think a lot of people that we connected with by playing live so such early on, and you know, we've built a fan base through being a good live band. Pretty much all the fans that we've made and all the friendships we've made, connections we've made, have really stayed true over these years of us growing. And I don't think that would be true had we decided to build our audience. By making like viral videos, or trying to be current, because like once you start chasing something, it already means that you're behind it. And I think it's a waste of time to try and be like current and relevant on any platform. You just kind of do what speaks to your soul, and it's going to speak to other people, and that's how you kind of build it.
It's funny that you say
that. And it feeds your soul better.
It's funny that you say that you don't think it's, you know, your sound is relevant. It's, you know, I feel like what you guys do is very true to like, you know, like classic blues and rock, have that sound. And I feel like every few years there's bands that kind of pop up and become huge hits. Like the Black Keys became, you know, very big, very quick, way back, you know, when I was a kid, it was the Black Crowes kind of came out of nowhere. And so I feel like that sound, for whatever reason, is always relevant. People can always relate to it because it's, you know, it harkens back to the true roots of rock and roll.
Yeah, that's a fair point, Andy. I agree.
Yeah, that's a good take.
It's like it definitely is a sound, I guess, that like, you know, it does change over the years, but it does come back every, you know, every so often. And and like in the bands that you mentioned.
Yeah. You guys are like
exactly. Yeah.
Sick.
Yeah. That's a good point. Yeah. So it's always going to have like the ebbs and the flows. And I think we're in like a really good time for rock and roll, you know, bands like,
totally.
Yeah. You know, like Greta Van Fleet, you got to bring them up as far as modern rock bands that are killing it, you know, whatever anyone wants to say about them, you can't take their success away. And like, you know, it's going to be interesting to see how that plays out in the next few years of, you know, like staying power and whatnot. I think that's something a lot of rock bands have struggled with. Well, any artist really since, I guess like since Nirvana, really, like how many bands have, you know, truly had staying power, you know, more than a few years.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll see.
So it seems like more and more bands now are doing like live streaming stuff because there's nothing else to do and they're trying to keep their fans engaged and people entertained. Is that something you guys have entertained or done at all? Or
yeah, like there was like I was like streaming every day. Like I was doing I'd start out with like a 20-minute lesson of like I would teach like all of our songs, and then like I ran out of all of our songs because we're a new band, and so we only have like 11 songs. So, you know, after 2 weeks, it was like, well, there's no more songs. So, like, I've slowed down on that, but we were having really good music chats and like bringing fun ideas up. Like, Cody and I, you know, we'll debate on like artists. You know, you could basically fit in any artist versus Queen, and Cody will argue Queen. And so, you know, we had a really good. Like few days worth where we were going back and forth on Bowie versus Queen and bringing a lot of our friends to weigh in on it. And that got a lot of traction because like,
it was, I think, great.
You know, you find those sore points where it's like really iconic, influential genre bending artists. And you know, mm-hmm. it's fun to like get people's takes on that. So live streaming is good. You know, live streaming is, it is what
it's
it great. Is, you know,
it's like, it's helpful for right now.
Yeah. And I think it just kind of helped everyone, even the people streaming, kind of keep their sanity and, you know.
Yeah.
So, Kevin, where did you come down? I mean, Queen or Bowie?
Well, Cody's always going to be Team Queen. I think
you can also be Team Queen. It's fine. You can be right, too. No.
I don't know. It's hard to say because like it's an interesting moment where it's like pretty much all of our fans that aren't necessarily musicians all leaned over to Queen, and a lot, and all of her friends that were artists all leaned over to Bowie, and it feels
that's
Queen
a lie.
Is more of like Queen is a bit more mainstream and like was reactionary, you know, whereas Bowie was a lot more of like a trendsetter and bit more of an iconoclast as far as an artist goes. And so it's great, you know, you can't really lose when it comes down to Bowie or Queen. It's like
they're both great.
Yeah, they're both great.
I but we just like, had to make it a battle.
They need to do one of those epic rap battles of history with Queen and Bowie.
Oh my god, that'd be great.
Those things are great. Andy, like, what do you prefer? Are you a Queen guy or a Bowie guy?
That is incredibly difficult. I think I would probably land on the side of Bowie. I think Bowie's a little more subversive than counterculture.
And, mm-hmm. Cool.
I find that a little more appealing. And but that's a really... Because when you first start talking about it, I'm like, oh, that sounds interesting. You're like Queen versus Bowie. I'm like, oof, that's rough. That's like...
Yeah, there's a lot there.
Yeah, that's like Stones versus Beatles. That's like a really tough one.
Yeah.
Oh, that's not exactly. Even a debate. It's the Beatles. I mean, what do you mean? It's like, do you want like the band that changed everything, or do you want a glorified bar band that just never broke
up?
Hey. You know,
Kevin's got the spiky words today.
Yeah, at least there's more nuance with Queen and Bowie. You know?
I mean, you know, if people write them hate mail, that still kind of counts as fan mail, right?
Yeah, see, that's the way I see it, man. I kind of like, you know, I've got this like game where if I go on our YouTube comments and I see more negative comments popping up, then I see it as like we're getting bigger because, you know, people put way more effort into hating stuff than they do liking stuff.
It's Absolutely. Wild. It's actually wild to see that, especially online when you're forced to be online. Man, people like love to go out of their way to like be negative. They like
it's
get
great.
High on it.
Yeah. Like that's, you know, that I think that was, you know, that was what helped propel Greta Van Fleet, you know, was that horrible Pitchfork review of their record, right? It's like they were big until that happened, and that made them become huge. And so it's like there's no such thing as bad press.
Yeah, I mean that I would rather do something that people really hate on. Or, you know, of course everyone wants to do something everyone loves, but if they really hate on it, you're at least getting some sort of reaction. It's the thing that you do that, oh, that happened. Oh, I don't really remember that. Like, I'd rather be hated than not remembered.
Yeah.
Totally. Yeah. That's fair.
Like, I don't want to be appreciated in my own time.
But I mean, at least you're generating feelings. So generally, if someone hates you, someone else is going to feel the exact opposite. But when you're kind of just that middle of the road, bland, not remembered at all, like that, you know.
Yeah, totally. I'm on the same boat as you, Andy. Definitely. I get that.
Yeah, absolutely. There's nothing worse than being boring. Yeah. And yeah, I see, like, Even Bowie said that, right? It's like, I can't tell you where I'm going, but I promise it won't be boring. You know, and like that's...
Same with Freddie.
No, there's...
He also said it.
Mm. Yeah, but who said it first?
Fucking Bowie. Knows?
Who knows?
I promise you.
This will go down as the podcast where you guys...
See, like, it's never ending. This has been like
a... Yeah.
It's yeah. like a two-week conversation, man. It's like... Once you get in the van, like, that's one thing I kind of miss about tour is, like, the van arguments that, like, spiral.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Over music. Oh, man. Because we're all audiophiles. Our whole crew, like, is super into, like, different kinds of music. And everyone's got, like, their own specific viewpoint and opinion. And it's so, like, intense. And when they, like, clash in the van, it can be wild. Sometimes it's I like, just throw my headphones in and hide in the back.
Yeah, like Calvin is like our long-suffering guitar tech and stage manager, and he's really big into this band called Little Feet. And I straight up like I'm a really big fusion and blues guy, and so one of my favorite bands is the Allman Brothers. And Little Feet, I guess, is like the weird, ugly cousin of the Allman Brothers.
Yeah.
And like straight up, like I'm a big music nerd. Before I met Calvin, I didn't even know this band existed. And I had this whole thing where I was trolling Calvin on the road and, you know, he'd be playing this record. And I'm like, Calvin, I'm fully convinced that this band isn't real and you've just made it up. You know, it's like, I've never met anyone ever. Like, you know so what? Bad. Little Feet is a great band. I've never heard anyone say that other than Calvin. And like, no, get me wrong, Little Feet's a great band. Like, you know,
Calvin's got a great taste in music.
Yeah, it's like that Mandela effect. I mean, like, do you know anyone who knows the band Little Feet?
I've never heard. No,
did it happen?
See, like straight up, man.
Did it
like,
even happen?
Yeah, it's so funny when you end up. You know, I'm sure being in a tour van is like that. Me and my producer are best friends, but it's like sometimes you just have to kind of irritate them because it's kind of fun.
Like, well, especially these days with like social isolation, who else are you gonna fight with, right?
Exactly.
Like unbeknownst to me, because I do feel bad for him because he listens to me more than anyone else because he does all the production and the editing to all three of our podcasts. So he listens over and over again. And so he'll pick up on like these weird things. And we were running this thing at a local brewery around Valentine's Day. And I kept saying Valentine's Day. It would drive him insane. So I just kept doing it.
Oh, yeah.
That's great. Oh, my God.
That's.
But if you can't irritate your best friends, you can irritate, right?
That's right.
Other than fighting on tour, like what is the best part of touring and like what's the worst part?
Other than fighting.
Man, that's about it. No.
You know, I'd risk, you know, sounding cliche, like playing the shows is pretty good. You know, that's.
Yeah, honestly. Like 8 hours of driving is so worth it when you're on there for like 45 minutes and you're like in your zone and in your element. And connecting with people and playing your music. That's like, you know, it's like the cliche truth.
Yeah, it's like it's your craft, man. It's like, you know, it's what we've spent like our entire lives working towards is that moment on stage. And it's like, you know,
it's a spiritual connection.
Like, yeah, like, you know, Cody's better at it than I am, but like we both practice mindfulness and like meditation and being present in the moment. And it's like all of that takes a lot of effort, you know, focusing on your breathing. But on stage, it's effortless. You're in the moment no matter what. You're not sitting there thinking like, I really got to like do my laundry, you know, you're there. In the moment. It's like, it's pure. It's pure. And it gets you to a place of like soul enrichment that nothing else gets you to, you know, like being in the studio can crush your soul. You know, it's actually a lot tougher, writing music and recording music, than most people will give credit for, whereas playing it on stage is the best thing ever. It's like pure catharsis, man. It's,
when, when you were
it's like a religious experience for sure. It's
when you were playing the stadiums, was there like that moment where you're like, this is what little Kevin and Cody in their room when they were kids were like working towards, and you had to like kind of sit back and like just kind of think about?
Yes. Every night, every single night we played, it was that, because this is what I've wanted to do since I could speak.
I used to watch my dad play drums.
Like, yeah, so, man.
You were playing drums before you could speak. I mean, you still can't really speak very well, so I mean.
I don't think Kevin, I don't think you give him much time to speak.
Oh.
That's true.
But yeah, I've been playing drums since I was literally a year old. It's pretty wild. Okay. My dad got me started on it. My dad was a drummer like his whole life, and he decided to give me a little drum kit because they saw me like hitting the pots and pans, you know, like the classic story. But my dad like went out and actually got me a kit and then taught me just the basics, and then was like really like Yoda about it, where he was like, I won't teach you anymore. It's good. Like, you know, I was basically like Luke going off to face Vader as a 1 year old. I was like, okay, well, here we go. And I discovered myself that way. It was the best thing he could have done, honestly. If he taught me like absolutely everything, how he played, I probably wouldn't have discovered my style. Right. So I had to carve my own path.
Yo, Code, if you were really like Luke, you'd be more like the guy from Def Leppard now.
So brutal.
Kevin, did there's you come a from a musical family? For us.
My dad is a really phenomenal folk fingerstyle guitarist, and he got a lot of his style from like early Dylan and John Prine records. And you know, like John Prine's passing recently is a huge bummer. But you know, like that, you know, that kind of like Travis picking finger style is something I've always really strived for. And so I'm really big into like finger style guitar playing. And I think that's why it works well as being a duo, because a lot of the time, if I can't get over my keyboard rig, my thumb is our bass player, and then my other fingers are doing the melody with Cody's voice, and that kind of works out. I grew up in like a pretty progressive, liberally minded household where everyone was pretty supportive of me pursuing music. And I wanted to become a music teacher, and like I've taught music lessons for years, and that's why I like doing the live streaming thing. It's nice to kind of like flex those muscles again and like nerding out on theory. And like that's like, you know, I think like the theory side of music is just as exciting for me as like the playing side. A lot of the time you can geek out and nerd out on things endlessly. That's a great thing about music, man. You just can't you'll never get to where you want to be. And you know, it's like
there's always more to learn. There's always more to learn with music.
Yeah, it's important to always remain a student.
Absolutely.
Is there like what's next? I mean, obviously you have, hopefully your big year has just moved a year away, or 6 months away. But is there like something on your bucket list that like, oh, we want to open for this person, or you know, play this venue?
Yes.
Like what's on your?
Yes, list? I want to play Red Rocks. Definitely want to play Red Rocks, and I want to open for King Gizzard. Yeah. King Gizzard and the Lizard Wizard would be sick to open for.
They're streaming their new.
What? Really, you don't know? Yeah. Oh my god! Okay, well, let me spread the gospel. Okay, so. They're a 7-piece psych garage prog band from Australia.
Okay.
And they're dope. Just check them out. They have like 15 albums out. and each one's like a different kind of genre and concept. Yeah. And there's something in it for everyone.
I'm stoked. Lizard Wizard.
Yeah. I recommend Nonagon Infinity if you're digging like classic rock kind of stuff. Like that's a good one. That's a good entry point.
Or like the Flying Microtonal Banana.
That's pretty wild too. Yeah. Cause there's different concepts surrounding each album. I can go way too deep than I want to admit on each one. So.
They're releasing their new, they made a film called Chunky Shrapnel, and I think that's coming out today, right?
Yeah. It's coming out today, and
it's like a live. We're actually just King Gizzard's press team disguised as a band.
But it's like a live record And then like a video to accompany it, which is pretty cool. But yeah, it's a great band.
I'll have to check it out. I mean, that's kind of one of those cool things about this. I get to meet so many people and I end up with so many recommendations about, you know, check out this movie or, you know, this band. And it, I feel like with as many avenues as we have to get content, mm-hmm. it's almost harder to find new content because the algorithms are so geared to showing kind of stuff you're already interested in and not new
stuff. Yes. Mm-hmm. Not enough new stuff. Totally. Yeah. That's one of the downfalls of that whole system.
Yeah. What's the, the joke? It's like, and the Grammy Award next year for Artist of the Year is going to be Lo-Fi Hip Hop Indie Beats Playlist.
That's really good.
I like that. That's awesome.
So do you guys have any gigs lined up? Or, like, is everything just kind of on pause?
Well, Kev, you can take them.
We've got, like, a big hometown show scheduled for July right now. That's optimistic. You know, we're playing it by ear. Mm-hmm. And then we've got a big the European tour that was supposed to happen in May has been moved to February. And that's with a band called Lark and Poe. They're amazing. They're like the sister blues rock duo and they slay.
Yeah, they're awesome.
So hopefully we get to go over to Europe with them in February now.
That would be great. Crossed. You know,
we're sending it out to the universe.
Off, but...
you know?
Yeah.
You know, I think a lot of the festivals that we're playing are being moved and whatnot. And so
all of them. Yeah.
We're just trying to stay.
We're just cruising.
Yeah.
That's really it.
Bro, you know?
Staying positive is the key.
Yeah. From a fan perspective, I love the festivals because you get more bang for your buck and you discover new people that you don't know.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah, it's great. I think my favorite part, we played a festival last year. We opened up for Gwar.
Shut up.
And that was fucking sick.
Oh, that was sick.
Yeah.
That was
like,
great,
we gotta
man.
See
they
them,
were suiting
like,
up.
Yeah, like we got to see them
in,
suit
like,
up.
Speedos.
And, like, oh. Yeah, like they don't wear a whole lot underneath those suits, man.
Dude, they wear Speedos and they like lube themselves up to get into the costumes.
Was it kind of
they
like
rock so much? They're
was it
so
kind of like being a little kid and seeing like Santa take off his beard? Like
that's a good way to put it. Yeah,
a little bit. But you ever like so? It also but reminded
Santa
me of like the Chuck E. Cheese Robo Band. You know, like the robotic band at Chuck E. Cheese. It also looked like that.
Yeah. Yo, that's a sick. Great fucking sick reference, bro.
So where can our listeners go to find you guys online?
You can find us on Spotify, Apple Music, Amazon Music, Google Play, everywhere you get your music.
Yeah, like check out our site, crownlandsmusic.com, and all of our info is there.
Yeah.
And when's the new album out? Is there a release date for that?
Sometime this year. Like we're being flexible with the way we're releasing it. So we're
so things are changing
right now to kind of figure out a way to kind of be novel with the way the record comes out and not necessarily just be like blotto, there it is. So we're gonna just do like an interesting kind of rolling thing, like Arthur Curry's Rolling Barrages, which is you know, I don't know why I remember that from Canadian history. That was like the First World War with the trench warfare, the Rolling Barrages.
Nice.
So that's kind of like the way we're going to roll up the record.
That is a Canadian reference that I don't know that I will have to look up.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like that's like our claim to fame, man. Like that was how we got out of like the trench warfare, you know?
I'm definitely going to, because I'm a big like history buff. I listen to Stuff You Missed in History Class, which is a great podcast.
Oh, sick.
I feel like
then you're going to get a kick out of that.
I feel like that's kind of one of those things that they would address.
Yeah,
totally.
We've been on like this deep dive of Russian history, and like that,
oh man, it's wild.
Fuck. And I thought like Canadian American history was wild, but like Russia, man, like there are, you know, there's a lot of interesting stuff that happened over there.
so many like weird, interesting history stories, and one of my favorite episodes they did, and it's about a doctor whose name I'm terrible with names, so I'm not going to remember who it is.
It's all good.
But his big claim to fame was that he was the first doctor to successfully perform a C-section. And so they kind of did this whole thing about how, you know, he started in London and ended up with a dignitary living in South Africa and doing all these things, kind of followed his life. And then they're like, when he passed away, they did an autopsy and found out he was a woman.
Whoa, cool. That's freaking awesome.
Yeah, they're not sure if he was trans or just posing as a man so he could be a doctor. And they're like, there's evidence that there was a child born. And so then they kind of like went back and kind of pointed out all
these
things. So
that's so cool. And this,
that's
this
so podcast, amazing.
This is all stuff you didn't learn, stuff you missed in
stuff
history
missed
class.
In history class, yeah.
Are there any other podcasts you'd recommend? Because that's right up our alley.
Well, oh God, what is that other one? There's another history one. Let me just check my podcast app.
Sick.
And because there's another good history one that I really like, and they specifically find weird stories in history.
That's so sick. They just be called I love that. History. Yeah, that's.
Oh, it's called Ridiculous History.
Ridiculous History.
And a little self-promotion, you should also check out the Old Colony Cast.
Okay.
It is one of our other shows, and it's kind of been going through constant transformation. It's been trying to find its voice. And just recently, we brought in a new host, a co-host, Hannah.
Oh, awesome.
And we've really kind of gone with a history aspect, and we did the history of Plymouth Rock, and we're doing we're recording the Mayflower episodes right now, and we did one about Burial Hill, which is where the Pilgrims first, it's like basically the first white person cemetery in this country.
Whoa, that's wild.
So, and it's just been a lot of fun to record. So the last few episodes are very history driven, a lot of fun. So
that's so cool, Andy. Hell yeah, we'll check it out.
But I want to thank you guys for coming on. This was a lot of fun, and I can't wait for you guys to go on tour and come to the Boston area, because I definitely want to check you guys out.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
Cannot wait to be on the road again.
Real. Oh, Andy, before I let you go, like, so you're from, like, from Boston. Like, have you heard of a band called Elder?
No. I'm from a little south
check
of Boston.
Them out.
But,
Okay.
But, like, yeah, they're all from, like, the Massachusetts area originally. Now all of the guys live in Germany. They're one of my favorite bands, man. Like,
they're cool,
based
man.
On, like, you know, I think, like, based on your taste, like, you probably, you dig them.
You
so.
Dig it. Yeah.
Okay, I'm going to write that down. Elder.
Elder.
Yeah. Yeah. They're
what
dope.
Was the other one? King, damn it. No, something.
Gizzard?
King Gizzard.
King Gizzard and the rest will show up. You'll find it.
Yeah, I think, that's kind of like, they just call themselves, like, King Gizzard now, pretty much.
Yeah.
That or you guys are cool.
Or Giz.
That's going to be in my search history.
Yeah.
excuse me, FBI.
Thank you so much for having us.
No,
what a great
really appreciate it.
And, that's it, man. So thanks for being with us. And,
awesome.
And thanks to our listeners for listening. And we hope you guys stay healthy and get on the road soon.
Yeah, thanks, man.
Cheers. Thanks a lot.
Nice to meet you. Take care, man.
Yeah.
All right.
Take care, Andy.
See ya.
Peace.
Thanks for listening to the podcast. You can find us on all social medias at InebriArt, except for Instagram. We're at InebriArt6. You can email us with your questions, complaints, and whatnot at InebriArt@yahoo.com. And if you're looking for more podcasts, you can check out the other podcasts on our network, Retro Redoctopus, America's Hometown Horror, and, of course, Bar Talk, Old Colony, and InebriArt podcast, the original. So check those out and subscribe and comment so we can reach more people. And thanks for listening.